As always, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The Steelers are on a roll. They are steamrolling the league now, Neil, taking it by storm. How did this happen?
I think mostly they won the coin toss in overtime.
There you go.
and we're able to sack the quarterback for the first time in however long. I don't think that happened at all in the second half of regulation. But, it's one of those things. A tale of two halves is a pretty common story in a football game. And I'm not surprised. I don't think that the Steelers are if the game were to have gone point for point one way to the other, I think we would be less reactionary following it than we were in this game. And obviously you've got the late game heroics from TJ Watt, a player mm-hmm. that I found to not really be a factor at all in the second half of that game. He came up big when his team needed him mm-hmm. to, and that's great. Does that define his entire game that night? I don't think so, but it certainly was memorable. Mm-hmm. Somebody needed to make a play, finally, but somebody needed to make a play on five drives in the second half, and nobody did. So for it to have had kind of a controversial, weird ending in regulation, followed by two big plays and the Steelers finally closing it out, it felt to me really just to kind of be a microcosm of what this season is probably going to be for Pittsburgh. They're going to do great things at times. They're going to do not great things at times. Mm-hmm. They'll make plays at some point when they need to. We'll see them win games. They're going to lose a lot of games like this one, though. Mm-hmm. And I think a more complete Seahawks team probably it takes them with the way that they had played in the second half. But at the same time, they did a great job in the first half. I think that really was kind of the offense that you could expect to see from Pittsburgh. It's two games in a row. I'm very encouraged by that. The fact that their offense was able to string series together, do things consistently well. It didn't start off the best, but it wasn't terrible either. They weren't making a ton of mistakes, which is what we saw earlier in the season. So I think they're taking a step forward. You really did see an exposed defensive front seven. And a large part of that is just due to the fact that after a while, when teams are getting enough film on this beleaguered Steelers defense, they're going to start to pick them apart. And that's definitely what Alex Collins and the Seahawks were able to do. Give them credit. It was a good scheme. They attacked it well. They ran well. They controlled all of the action in the third quarter. They had 175 yards of offense in the third quarter. I mean, that's a 700-yard game. It felt every bit of that as well. They had the ball for the entire time. Pittsburgh couldn't respond with anything, and that just kind of shows that the yang to the first half to end. They're able to do good things at times, but I don't think they're complete enough as a team to play at an outstanding level for four quarters. They're going to take their lumps, and they're going to have to be able to swing back probably a little bit better than they did against Seattle Sunday night.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have now lived in a world of highlights for a long period of time, and highlights are always the greatest plays. You watch the game, and you watch every game. Watt really hasn't played all that great this season, but he made a couple of highlight plays in that game, including the one at the end. And that's my assessment. Is that what you saw?
Absolutely. I think that the groin injury that he suffered in the first half of week two has limited him quite a bit.
No question.
I think that
that's from not having training camp.
Very well could be. The conditioning piece of it. I said this to some people earlier this week as well. The conditioning piece is not just when you're on the field; it's your recovery. Is it perhaps taking him a little bit longer? I don't know, but I thought perhaps Devin Bush would be in shape as well. He looks like a shell of the player that we've seen. I'm not even sure how great of a player that was back then. He has a groin injury along with the rehab still ongoing from the ACL surgery. So he's not quite the same player right now either, but these are players I think that are going to play back to a pretty decent level. And you can count on them probably, within a couple weeks still. It's something Watt, considering the money that he's making, is going to need to overcome, and it certainly looks like he did on the two plays, you know, back to back series and overtime. It was great to see him do that, but he disappeared for a good chunk of that game. He wasn't there, and I dared mention that after the game, and people screamed that he tipped a pass at the line of scrimmage. Like, all right, that's great. You know, I'm not downplaying that, but it's not the performance that you would categorize as one of the best that he's had. And he's a big stage player. You remember the Buffalo game?
No question.
2 years ago, they had no business beating that Buffalo team, and they didn't. But they competed with them largely because of the strength that T.J. Watt showed in that game. I thought that might have been the final touches on a defensive player of the year for him. He was at that level. He didn't win it, but he was certainly competitive for it. He's not playing at that level overall. He's not making a play per series, which is really kind of what you expect from a dominant, highly paid edge rusher. And a large part of that is going to be because of his injury. Once he can come off of that, they can get a little bit more help. But to me, more than anything, the real story is what it's showing is just how completely dominant Cam Hayward has been.
That's why. See, I look at a game like a defense is on the field anywhere from 50 to 70 plays, and we see the highlights of two or three great ones. You watch Hayward, it seems like of the 50 to 70 plays, he's turning in 35 to 40 really good ones all the time, even though he may not be making the tackle.
Yeah, if you're worried about anybody staying healthy right now, it's Hayward.
Yes.
He's doing the job of two people. He's not supported much on that defensive line. With all due respect, I think to his credit, I won't call out Chris Wormley. I think Wormley has played very well for what they were hoping. They're getting more from him than they would have hoped. Isaiah Bugs is not a great player. Carlos Davis hasn't played in however long. Henry Mondu is there when bad things are about to happen. They're not getting much around Hayward, and he's having to do so much. And that's really what Seattle did. They ended up staying away from Hayward as much as humanly possible, trying to put somebody on the backside to be able to get in his way. And then they just double teamed everything in front of him. They basically said, we're going to stay away from you. We're just going to concentrate on this side of the field and play as if you're not even there and hope you don't get to our ball carrier before he gets to the hole, which is going to be wide open because your linebackers aren't making plays. Your secondary is missing tackles left and right. And that's part of the reason why they ran for a huge amount of success in three drives that all started within the third quarter. Two of them were scoring drives. Cam Hayward was they had to scheme around the individual. And frankly, that might not be the guy that teams would typically try to scheme around. Watt would be your concern. A guy like Minka might be more of your concern. They focused intently on Hayward and did not want him to be a factor against the run. And they got run all over when they were able to just simply get away from him, not go anywhere near him. To make your team that one-dimensional and to have that be an active choice that the Seahawks made,
right,
it goes to show, one, how valuable Hayward is, how good he's playing.
Yes.
And most importantly for the Steelers, there isn't anyone else against the run making plays. They're telling them exactly where they're running the ball, and there was nobody there. Guys couldn't get off blocks. Collins got, you know, maybe tapped around the line of scrimmage and still ran for 5-6 more yards. It was a pretty bad run defensive performance.
Yeah.
And you hate to see that happen when Cam Hayward was on the field.
Right.
But my thought was really like, oh man, heaven help him if Cam Hayward's not on the field.
Right, they've got big trouble.
They're in significant trouble. You think it's bad if Watt is injured? See what happens if Hayward gets injured.
I know they're trying to promote stars as often as possible. That's why we have to see, you know, anywhere from 15 to 18 Aaron Donald replays when the Rams play. Same thing with Watt. Let's face it, you're sitting at home. We're not stupid. Well, I felt like they were trying to do the same thing with Najee Harris the other night. I think Harris is a really good rookie who's he's only playing instead of with five cards in his hand. He's only playing with three because the offensive line is a problem. What have you thought of Harris to this point? Because I think he's talented. There's no getting around it. But
I went back specifically to look at some of the stuff that I wrote about Le'Veon Bell, his rookie year.
Yeah.
And before getting into that, I will say this. I was, in my world anyway, kind of famous for not really liking the Bell pick when they made it. And I will point out, his rookie year, he played at about 243 pounds.
Right.
To the point, the scouting report on Le'Veon Bell was he was a Jerome Bettis-type running back. That's laughable to me. Le'Veon Bell did not play at all like Jerome Bettis. You couldn't have a worse comparison for him. He was a really big zone running back. He was not a power guy at all. And Bell played exactly like that his rookie year. Yet he always racked up, you know, positive praise from his coaches. And he made some plays. You were excited about the direction he was going. I remember in particular the whole nonsense rule that the ball dies wherever the player's helmet comes off after two Ravens players literally destroyed his helmet hitting him there. I think it was the Thanksgiving game or a primetime game not long after that,
right.
Knocked him out, and the ball was dead right there despite the fact Bell landed in the end zone after it. A great player in the making. When Bell shed 20 pounds, that's when he became Le'Veon Bell.
That's right.
So he needed a season and an off season and two camps to turn into the player that he was when he destroyed the Browns in week one of 2014. Mm-hmm. He was a completely different player.
Mm-hmm.
You were really excited about him then. I feel so much of the same type of thing with Najee, and I'm not going to say that he needs to lose weight or anything like that. He carries his weight a lot better.
Yes,
than
he does.
He is just an amazing athlete, and he's getting better. You can see him get better, but he misses a lot. You know, I think his film reviews are pretty long. Not that he shouldn't. He's a rookie. It's just he's being touted as a player with this high-end production, and he's only had statistically – one outstanding game, and he was bad against Seattle. He didn't do anything. To your point, I agree with completely the amount of ramming the square peg into the round hole that they tried to do with him in that game was amazing. I was like, this isn't working. You know, you're not able to do much with him, and they ran a bunch of different stuff. To me, it's you're really trying to drive a Ferrari in a 25-mile-an-hour zone. It's not working as well as you want it to, and you keep, you know, kind of gliding around the block wanting to open it up, and you can't because you don't have the surrounding environment to do that. Their offensive line they're not standing up well to this point. I will say this. Zach Banner, it sounds like he's going to return at right tackle the following week, I should say, the game against Cleveland. They're on bye next week, of course. It sounds like that's part of the plan, and I would imagine that will move Chukwuma Okorafor over to left tackle and get poor Dan Moore back on the bench. He's clearly not ready for the action that he's gotten, and hats off to him for the effort. But I think with that, you will see an improvement with what they're able to do schematically. But right now, a lot of people are looking much more down the line than where Harris is today. Right now, he's a running back who misses a lot of holes. He's a running back that if he can get outside and get one-on-one, he might be able to make a play. But he's not a breakaway back.
Right.
He's not a pure power guy in the middle either. He's a lot of things. He's not a dominant player in any one of them. So, to me, he's more of a production guy right now. I don't think that he is especially outstanding. He is talented. You're right.
He's talented.
He's lacking in vision, and he clearly does not have the athleticism to outrun NFL players, and we're seeing that more and more. He's not going to be a game-breaking guy. You're excited if he gets 10 yards. You know, you have to set him up in the passing game. He's not going to be able to create that on his own the way that the top guys will. But we'll see. You know, he needs reps for sure. He needs to run more, which is weird considering he played at a major school for a while, and he's 24 years old coming into this season. So there's work that he needs to put in, and I think that I trust his work ethic. You have to love his character.
I agree with that.
Kid.
Absolutely.
You hope that he develops that. But what we're seeing right now is pretty rough.
It's
not nearly as good as people are making it out to be.
Here's the issue. He played at Alabama, okay? Big plus. Which means that – and he led the SEC in broken tackles. But the first contact normally, and I'm generalizing here, was usually 5-6 yards down the field when you got a head of steam to break a tackle.
And it's a cornerback coming in from the edge, you know.
Exactly. Or he hurdles somebody. But again, that would be, 5 to 10 yards down the field. That's when the first contact was taking place. In the NFL, the problem he has with this offensive line is the first contact's taking place in the backfield. And, you know, and it's just that you don't have that head of steam. And you got to be really ultra special to break those tackles like that, because you don't have the head of steam to do it, as opposed to Alabama when you were 5 or 6 yards down the field. And really, because of where you stood, that means you're already 9 to 10 yards forward before you get hit, because you're lining up in the backfield.
Yeah, that's a big part of the reason why that the Alabama offensive linemen are often being drafted higher than
no question.
They have a great scheme. I don't need to tell you that, of all people. You know, you have a far better insight of that than I do. But he's not able to make guys miss when he's in the backfield. And if he is, and he ends up leading the league in missed tackles, he's not going to have the production that matches that stat. He's going to become one of the weirder statistical outliers the game has seen. And it's great that he can break tackles. He's never going to be he's doing that with his strength, not his elusiveness. And I think that really should be more of a stat for a running back's ability to evade. He's stiff-arming guys. He's knocking them down because he's strong.
Yep.
You're not going to get away with that a whole lot in the NFL, and you're going to take an awful lot of contact to do it. He's definitely a featured member of their offense. And, again, you like to see where it's going, but you're going to get a lot of games like you saw on Sunday. What was it, 15 for 33, something like that?
Yep.
He was often used in the passing game as well. Mm-hmm. He's had, I think, of the 6 games he's played, 5 of them, he's carried the ball at an average of less than 3.5 yards carry.
Right.
He's noticeably worse than what Bell was at this point, even if he does have more yards.
Right.
He just gets the ball a lot more. That's what I mean when I say he's purely a production guy right now. They need to find a way to get him the ball in space. They need to find a way to create a lane for him to get through, and then let him use the ability that he has to take, you know, a 2-yard gain and make it into 6. That's really who he is as a player.
Well, I'll save this for next week when you come back, because this is the bye week. I want to get your thought next week on overall how you feel Matt Canada is handling the offense based on the personnel that he has available to him. So I want to give you a chance to think about that, because again,
that's an excellent question. It was a plan of something to watch this coming week in lieu of a game to have to break down and analyze. There's a lot there. It's very interesting to this point.
Right. Because again, the key is, what are you running offensively based on the talent that you have?
With what you have.
Right. And see, that's never, nobody ever brings up both parts. It's always like, what do you think of his scheme? Like, oh, for goodness sakes.
Okay. They're talking about the success of plays, not the scheme. Those are not mutually exclusive things.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot that goes into it.
Right.
But it's an interesting question. Yeah. He had a Herculean task this entire offseason. I know that.
Well, we'll talk about that next week. Enjoy your bye weekend. I hope you get a chance to do something fun, because you work so hard. We appreciate you very much.
I appreciate coming back. Thanks for having me.